This program is intended for mature audiences only.
Welcome to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August, and on today's show, we're going to be talking to Wendy Maltz. Wendy Maltz is an internationally recognized therapist and an expert on healthy sexuality and sexual recovery. And today, we're going to be talking about healthy sex. We're going to be talking about sexual recovery. We're going to be talking a little bit about some of the distinctions between what's healthy and unhealthy, and also I hope a little bit about how to find your path out into healing out of sexual trauma.
You know, you can't flip through the channels on television mm-hmm. without seeing somebody getting scared sexually by someone else, you know, or intimidated, or people using sex like very callously and superficially. And then we're expected to have these great life-affirming, deep, intimate connections with another person when we have learned skills for kind of very superficial relating and unsatisfying relating. Well, there can be memory loss problems, but most people know about 1 in 3 females and 1 in somewhere between 5 to 7 males are estimated to have been sexually abused by the time they're 18. And then there's a whole healing for couples that needs to happen. Partners have a lot to learn. Partners often, you know, like approach it really when they're ignorant, they approach it in ways like, oh, let's rent a dirty movie, and then, you know, that'll get you turned on, honey.
Right.
It's like, no. That often recreates dynamics that existed in the sexual abuse that they see in porn or whatever.
So, welcome, Wendy. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Just a little bit of background. Wendy is a licensed clinical social worker, a licensed marriage and family therapist, and a certified sex therapist with more than 25 years of clinical experience treating sex, intimacy, and relationship concerns. She's written a whole bunch of things. She's the author of The Sexual Healing Journey, A Guide for Survivors of Sexual Abuse. She's a co-author of Private Thoughts, Exploring the Power of Women's Fantasies. She's got several other books and a forthcoming book that I'm actually pretty interested in called The Porn Trap, The Essential Guide to Overcoming Problems Caused by Pornography. And we talked a little bit on the phone, and she's really a fascinating and interesting guest. So, Wendy, let's just dive right in here. Your website is called healthysex.com. So it seems to me a great place to start our conversation is to just talk about what do you mean by healthy sex?
Healthy sex, you know, it's something that we should all know and not have to really talk about.
Yeah,
which
I know.
Is interesting, you know. It has to do with sex that comes from a place of caring and responsibility and respect for a partner and for yourself. So this kind of sexuality is very life-affirming, and it increases your self-esteem, creates intimacy with a partner, and it leads to, you know, happier families, better communities, and a good life.
And you're distinguishing this with unhealthy sex. What would unhealthy sex look like?
Unhealthy sex is a sex that has to do with people being abusive towards one another, or being abusive towards a person, like through domination or exploitation, where people are treated as objects. Sex is all about power. Sex has to do with violence and with humiliation, things like that, where the sexual energy, it just bubbles up in us naturally. It's there in our hormones. It's and, you know, it's there in our sex drive. And it's like we have this. It's kind of like a bubbling spring or something. And the way that you channel it in life makes a difference in terms of whether it ends up moving towards positive outcomes or in ways that are destructive. And when sex becomes addictive, compulsive, or harmful, then it's unhealthy.
So addictive sexuality, sex addicts, love addicts, romance addicts, it's a pretty a modern concept and pretty new concept, I notice. It's a thing that people are talking about a lot now, but I don't think I even heard of 20 years ago. I'm wondering, when you talk about sex becoming addictive, what do you mean? You know, I like sex. I'd like to have it all the time. Is that addictive? You know, like,
right.
What do you
well,
mean?
It's when a person has a compulsion, a craving for it. They can't stop. And that it is producing negative consequences and it's out of control. That's that's addictive. And you can become addicted to shopping, to gambling, and sex. It creates different changes in the brain chemistry. And so there's dopamine release and adrenaline. And people can kind of become addicted to the chemical changes that go in their brain when it's a driven type of sex. But like laughter, when it's healthy, you can't have enough of it. And it's just life-affirming and good. So when there are conditions of consent, equality, respect, trust, and safety, then those are like all green lights. And when they're lined up, then it's sort of like go for it and really enjoy yourself, you know. And because you know that when those conditions exist of consent, equality, respect, trust, and safety, that it's going to lead to positive outcome for you and for a partner if you're with a partner.
Yeah, and yet I notice in long-term partnerships, some of these things that you're saying, which sound so clear, have such clear demarcations in relationship, I think often don't. Certainly some amount of sexuality, I think people, part of what they enjoy is, in fact, playing with games of power and domination and submission. And isn't that part of fun?
Well, I think that when it's a game, that's a different thing than when it's in all seriousness. If two people consent to and they understand what playful activity they're doing or fantasy play they're doing, then it's like that can be positive for the couple relationship. It's when one person is imposing something on the other and that other person doesn't feel comfortable with it but feels obligated or feels like they have to do it for some reason or put down if they don't, then there are problems. Because in sexuality, that's an expression of our most unique inner nature. And when you're doing it and it feels like you're forcing it or you're being made to express, then it can't be genuine. And then it just doesn't feel good to have those kinds of experiences. And it doesn't lead to good self-esteem or good intimacy.
So I just want you to know I completely agree with what you're saying, but I still want to push on it.
Okay.
I don't disagree with a word that you're saying. And what
not
I noticed,
to be domineering or pushy.
No. I notice is it seems like you've been in practice now for more than 25 years.
Oh, yeah.
So I know you've seen this. It seems like, for instance, that many people feel like the marital sex is an obligation. It's not a choice. Part of my deal getting married was I now owe my sexuality to my partner.
Ooh, I don't know. I don't like that kind of an attitude. I don't
me neither.
See it working for couples when they have that. I think having an understanding that sexuality is a healthy and important part of any long-term relationship, I think that's good to have. And to go into a relationship where you're intending not to be sexual isn't a great start, and it's not realistic.
Oh, I'm not
but,
clear that it's,
yeah.
the, it's the intention at the beginning so much as what happens over time.
What happens, right. But I think that this is some part of the mystery and challenge of intimacy is being able to make it work for both people in a way where neither person feels put upon or taken advantage by the other, dominated or forced to do anything they don't want to do. And it's how to have how to have it be positive and exciting and nurturing, for a long time. And I think when people have positive experiences and they feel their self-esteem grow from it, they just naturally want to continue doing it, and they want to continue having sexual relations with the partner that makes them feel that way, makes them feel respected, makes them feel loved, makes them feel special.
And yet, absolutely. And I notice that I'm still sort of lost on the boundaries of all this. I'm lost on the boundaries of, I notice you make a distinction, for instance, between secret and private. What is the distinction between secret and private?
I think it has to do with shame, whether something is shame generating. When it's secretive and you're keeping it from your partner, or you have a feeling that that if it was known, you would feel you'd feel ashamed, just flat out across the board, like that this is something you know you shouldn't be doing.
Mm.
When it's private, it can be something that you feel okay about doing. You just don't want broadcast to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, of course, with sex, there's so much shame that people carry into it. That doesn't this all get a little confusing?
Mm. Yes, it can. I think sexuality is one of the most confusing things that we have going in life, you know. I've been studying it for over 30 years, and I'm still a little baffled by it at times.
I'm right there.
But
right.
I think it's also one of the most joyful and miraculous and, you know, dynamic experiences we can have. And that's why I've kind of committed, you know, the work that I do to helping people who've been sexually abused or who are suffering from sexual addictions to be able to get a healthy sexuality and reclaim that, because I think it's everybody's birthright.
Yeah, I agree. I actually think we're born shameless and
sexual and innocent
and curious, and then things happen to us in life that steal that from us.
Exactly. We have a very schizophrenic society when it comes to sex. I mean, we're fed from very early ages images of sexual violence and sexual exploitation. There's so much, you know, you can't flip through the channels on television
mm-hmm.
without seeing somebody getting scared sexually by someone else, you know, or intimidated, or people using sex like very callously and superficially. And then we're expected to have these great, life-affirming, deep, intimate connections with another person when we have learned skills for kind of very superficial relating and unsatisfying relating.
Yeah, it all gets very confusing to me, though, because, I completely agree, and then I also know that part of why our media is so filled with those images is that there's sort of a way that they take normal human experiences, exaggerate them to the point of drama, and then it gives us sort of a vicarious thrill to watch it on the screen rather than to act it out.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, yeah, to some extent. And also because sex sells.
Yeah.
We have a very commercially oriented society.
Why do you suppose that is, that sex sells?
Well, when you watch sex or you see things that are sexually suggestive or hear sexual stories, it affects your body chemistry. You do start releasing some dopamine. You do get that vicarious thrill has to do with some chemical reactions that go on. We can get a bit of a sexual buzz just, hearing descriptions that are sexually provocative.
Yeah, it actually usually works for me. So, one more question here. I'm a little curious. I noticed in one of your models, you made a distinction between making love and authentic intimacy. Can you briefly tell me what is the distinction between making love? I mean, I always thought of my lovemaking as part of my authentic intimacy.
Well, I think it certainly can be an expression. That you're referring to a hierarchy that I wrote about that's on my website, healthysex.com, the MALTS hierarchy of sexual interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I put authentic sexual intimacy as the ultimate kind of way of sexual relating. And that's where the making love or the activity that you do is connected with your genuine self. There's a high level of honesty, a sense of, can often be a sense of spiritual connection. And where it doesn't matter so much what activities you're doing, it's this feeling of emotional intimacy that is being shared along with the physical pleasure. Now, in just making love, if we look at that, that can be sometimes like performance. And people can get caught up in what they're doing, like, oh, we have to do position number 6 tonight, you know, or, you know, how much variety you have, or how gymnastic you got, as opposed to really focusing in on the heart feelings and your sense of your genuine individual expression that's coming out in your sexual relating. That would be more the authentic. So I think making love can be a route to experiencing this more authentic intimacy. But in and of itself, if you get caught up in the behaviors and the look of it, you can miss out on the feel of it.
I think you're using making love in a way that I would. For me, it doesn't actually rise to lovemaking until it becomes that authentic thing, but I think I completely understand what you're saying.
I mean, you want to feel that afterwards you can turn to your partner, and, you know, you can turn to each other and go, we actually made some love there.
Right, exactly. Exactly right. Listen, we need to take a short break, and this is perfect because it's a nice lead-in to the next place I want to go. So those of you listening, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the negative side of this. We're going to talk a little bit about sexual abuse and the sexual healing journey. So please come on back after this break. And please do listen to my sponsors. They have some pretty good deals for you. And when you support the sponsors, you also support this show. So please listen in and stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Listen to Sex, Love, and Intimacy, a podcast providing weekly audio workshops for your pleasure and connection on personallifemedia.com.
We're back. You're listening to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August. I'm talking to Wendy Maltz. She's a licensed clinical social worker, a marriage and family therapist, and a sex therapist. And when we took our break, we were talking a little bit about healthy, authentic lovemaking and intimacy and making some distinctions between what's healthy and unhealthy. I want to take a little time, Wendy, to talk a little bit about the unhealthy and the journey out of that. The title of one of your books, The Sexual Healing Journey, A Guide for Survivors of Sexual Abuse. I was looking at the book, and I know that sexual abuse is rampant. I know that there's so much more out there than is reported. So first, I just want to say, how does somebody even know if they've been abused or not? I mean, it seems like people don't even remember.
Well, there can be memory loss problems, but most people know. About 1 in 3 females and 1 in somewhere between 5 to 7 males are estimated to have been sexually abused by the time they're 18.
Is that worldwide or nationwide?
That's nationwide.
Wow, 1 in 3. Oof.
Yeah, it's high, and about 1 in 4 women raped in their lifetime. So, and some people think it's more like 1 in 2 female sexually abused. And there are all forms of it, you know, all different types of it. It can be touch. It can be also witnessing abusive acts that are done to other people as
mm-hmm.
well. It can be kind of more indirect. But of the direct stuff, that's where those figures came from, where people actually self-report that they were raped or molested. It's sexual harm done from one person perpetrating that on another. It's being sexually hurt through domination or exploitation by another person.
Now, it seems to me this has a high likelihood of making it really difficult for a person to sustain healthy sexual relationships thereafter, yeah?
Well, a lot of survivors have reported sexual problems, and that was the major impetus for the work that I did with the sexual healing journey. I wanted to create a recovery book for people who've been sexually abused, and it has been. It's been in print like 15 years now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a different kind of approach needs to happen then in standard sex therapy work with people, because when you're sexually abused, you often develop like a lot of fear about sex and a withdrawal from it, or you can develop kind of compulsive behaviors. It goes in one or two directions, or there can be a mixture, like a man who might withdraw from sex with his wife but then be compulsively involved in pornography on his own in secret. So there's, and people share a lot of different kinds of sexual functioning problems, difficulty getting erections, having orgasm, a lot with low sex desire in females. So it has some pretty negative consequences that can last for years if they're not addressed.
And then, how does one go on this journey? Where do you start? Where do you begin?
Well, I think you begin with seeing the connection between any sex problems you might be having now and your awareness that you were sexually abused, and then having that knowledge that sexual abuse can cause problems. In the book, The Sexual Healing Journey, I have a whole inventory of sexual problems, and some people start there just checking off things on the inventory they can sort kind of see that have been associated with early abuse. And when you know, if you notice you've been checking a whole lot of things off, you can go, oh my goodness, I guess that what my Uncle Harry did to me did have an effect, you know.
Right.
And so making the connection, and then you can move from that to developing new attitudes towards sex. You got to start seeing sex as something different than you learned it to be in the sexual abuse. If you ask a survivor what is sex, they'll often give you a very good definition of sexual abuse.
Right.
It hurts, it's painful, it's something I feel I have to do, you know, things like this.
And so it's almost as if you have to create a whole new definition for what the word sex even means.
Exactly. So you start with attitudes, and attitudes about yourself, realizing you are not what was done to you. You can you were born innocent sexually, and you can create a sense of yourself as a sexual person that's very different than the way you were treated in abuse. And from there, you can move on to being able to handle the kind of automatic and overcome the automatic reactions to touch that are often very common for survivors, where they can have a reaction like they feel disgust or anger come up with touch or powerlessness. And the book, you know, has a lot of exercises, relearning touch exercises. I also have several DVDs that talk about couples healing, and one that relearning touch that shows the people demonstrating the different relearning touch exercises. They're not like sex exercises per se. They're more the kinds of things that people, they're like pre-sex therapy kind of exercises. They're often done with clothes on or some amount of clothing. And they have to do with learning skills like being able to breathe and relax and stay calm during touch, so that and being able to communicate your needs. These are all things that a lot of people didn't get to develop, these skills, because of early sexual abuse. And it involves stopping any sexual behaviors that are destructive, acting out behaviors with dangerous sexual and risky sexual practices, and agreeing to sex when you don't really feel like it. And then there's a whole healing for couples that needs to happen. Partners have a lot to learn. Partners often, you know, like approach it really, when they're ignorant, they approach it in ways like, oh, let's rent a dirty movie, and then, you know, that
right.
gets you turned on, honey.
Right.
It's like, no. That often recreates dynamics that existed in the sexual abuse that they and porn or whatever. So, you know, when both members of a couple learn about the problem and the ways that work to heal, then they can be really effective, and they can reach levels of intimacy and sharing and satisfaction they never thought possible. And people who weren't abused often don't reach.
So it's not only hopeful that last thing you just said there, that was, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's the argument I have. I lead workshops in love and intimacy and sexuality, and people say to me, well, I don't need that. And I think, well, yeah, but what's good still could get better.
Right.
So, you know, I noticed that there's a I don't know, an undercurrent that I hear in people in general about, oh God, another victim, you know, another thing that you can be a victim of. Everybody's a victim of something. Isn't it kind of hard to identify yourself in this without sort of falling into this trap of woe is me, I'm a victim?
Well, you know, if you have the reality of sexual abuse in your history, then it's important to face it. And unfortunately, we have a culture where some people do respond by blaming victims for things that happen to them. There's a lack of compassion and empathy does exist in a certain subgroup of the population. But I think most people nowadays are pretty understanding and pretty compassionate towards people who've been sexually abused. It's actually, I've seen a nice change happen in the last 20 years with that. I think more people are believed, and there is less of a tendency to attack and blame. But you know, we also, because our culture is so filled with images and stories of sexual violence, we can become callous in a negative way about it and not respond well of realizing how profound an injury this is. I think it's second to murder.
Mm.
I think it's the most intimate kind of wound and suffering you could experience in the hands of another human being. Compared to murder, I mean, what else is there? You know.
Well, I think from the point of view of the survivor, in a way, it's worse than murder because you get robbed of your soul. You know, you get robbed of the opportunity to have joy in your life
and experience that innocently. The beauty of sexuality. Yeah.
How do you find what sex really means after that's happened to you? Where do you even begin to look? I listen to you in a way, critical of so many of the media images. Are there positive media images that you point people to?
Yeah,
there,
I think there are some. There's a few movies I can point to, like Mississippi Masala with Denzel Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I can probably count the positive ones on one hand now, you know, or some. Actually, when I've traveled to other countries, I've seen some more positive images of sexuality, like when I was in New Zealand and even in Canada, than I've seen in the United States, you know, and in Europe they have some. But we do, on occasion, we have love stories, and you can see people, you know, being loving. I used to like the Cosby program.
Uh-huh.
I thought the couple there, the Huxtables, were so cute in the way they dealt with sexuality. You know, I think we need more of those positive images of people having positive touch with each other and, you know, and just enjoying it from a place of mutual respect and caring and fun.
And on that note, it seems like a good moment to take a break. So I'm talking to Wendy Maltz. My name is Chip August. You're listening to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. We're going to take a short break. Please listen to the sponsors' messages, and if you can support the sponsors, that's a way to support our show. Do stay tuned, because Wendy's going to give you an exercise to do. We'll be right back.
Listen to A Taste of Sex, Erotic Poetry Reading, a companion program to Life in an Orgasm-Based Community. It's open mic night at One Taste San Francisco, a weekly audio program on personallifemedia.com.
We're back. This is Sex, Love, and Intimacy, and I'm talking to Wendy Maltz, and we've been talking about the sexual healing journey, and it's just been fascinating talking about both what is healthy sexuality and what's the path out of unhealthy into healthy, and what's the path of healing. And I've really been enjoying listening to you. I like to think those of you who are listening to the show, if something resonates with you, that maybe this is the impetus to maybe get some healing where you need some healing, and come out of some of the pain and into some of the joy that life offers when we can heal. Wendy, if people want to get in touch with you, or they want your books or your DVDs, how would they do that?
Well, probably the best place to go is my website, and that's www.healthysex.com, all one word, healthy sex. It's funny, you can break it into heal thy sex, if you look at that.
Well, of course.
Yeah, and I have articles on there and information about my books and DVDs, and information about speaking gigs and stuff like this as well.
And listeners, if you want, if you go to the personallifemedia.com website, you can find text and transcripts of this show and all of the Personal Life Media shows. And on the text and transcripts also are links. So you could, that's another way to link to Wendy and her site. Also, if you have comments for me, you can reach me, Chip, at personallifemedia.com. I'm always happy to read and listen to any feedback that I get. And if somehow email doesn't work and you'd really prefer to leave a message, you can call 206-350-5333. Please leave, it's a voicemail system. Please leave your name, leave the name of the show, which is Sex, Love, and Intimacy, and your question or comment. We'll need your phone number and or your email address. And please know that when you leave a message on that site, that's your agreement for us to potentially use it on air. So if it's something you don't want broadcast, please don't leave it there. Wendy, one of the things my listeners have come to expect from me is an exercise from my guests, something they can do in their own life to help their own sex and love and intimacy. So we talked about this a little bit, and I understand you have one for us.
Yes, I can share with you the hand-to-heart exercise that is in my book, The Sexual Healing Journey. This is an exercise I often suggest for people whether they have a history of sexual abuse or not. It's a nice exercise for being able to connect touch with loving feelings. You sit facing your partner about a little less than an arm's length away, and you each rest your right hand on each other's heart. And you look, make eye contact, although you don't have to maintain eye contact throughout it. You can close your eyes and open them as you feel comfortable. But you get in touch with the things that you appreciate and love and care about your partner, and you imagine those ideas and feelings. You picture them and experience them in your heart. And then you imagine those feelings going up to your shoulder and down your arm, and out through the palm of your hand into your partner's heart, where they are met with your partner's loving feelings and thoughts of appreciation about you, and transferred through your partner's right arm down into your heart. And you create a circle, a flow of loving energy from hand to heart and heart to hand. And this is a silent kind of meditative exercise, and you can recall times when you met each other and things that you were most struck by and all the things you appreciate about each other, and feel those loving feelings moving from your hand to your heart and through your heart to each other's heart. And it's great because people often go, oh, now I get it. Now I kind of have an understanding of what it's like to transfer love feelings through the body. You can also, in advanced versions, put your hand on each other's genital area and transfer and send your loving feelings and feelings of caring and respect and appreciation into your partner's genitals and up your partner's. They go up through to your partner's heart and out through your partner's hand into your genital area, and you can create a circle of appreciation that way. That's in the advanced version.
It's probably not the place to start, huh?
That probably wouldn't be the place to start. And you can do this with clothes on, you know. It's just, you can do it to cheeks. You can do it to other tummies, too.
So I want to add one more variation, just because it's something that I sometimes teach my clients, which is to actually do both. One hand over the heart, one hand over the genitals.
Uh-huh.
There's just some magic about connecting. We have so many of us carry so much shame about our genitals and so much pain and shame about our sexuality. And
yes,
there's just something about actually combining heart and genitals, which
yes,
to me is sort of this Welcome Back to Innocence, and you know, this
Actually, in the new book that's coming out in March of 2008 that my husband and I have put together, The Porn Trap, for a recovery book for people with porn problems, we do actually share an exercise there that has to do with heart and genitals, too.
That's so great. That's so great.
Because the genitals often get left out of the loop when there's problems like abuse and addiction.
Well, Wendy, you have been a great guest. I would love to have you back when your new book is coming out, because I think we could do a whole show on pornography and the trap of pornography. It's definitely be a lot of fun to talk about, and I think very informing. So I hope we will talk again probably in the next few months, yeah?
I hope so, too. It's been great, Chip.
Thanks. And that brings us to the end of the show. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm your host, Chip August. You've been listening to Sex, Love, and Intimacy, and please join us again.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.